He's the boss at Baseball HQ, and we'll talk roster management and trading with Ron Chandler next at Baseball HQ Radio.
Are you ready to do some winning? Learn to play the winner's way, because Baseball HQ Radio starts right now. And here's your host from BaseballHQ.com and Regina, Saskatchewan, columnist Patrick Davitt.
And welcome to Baseball HQ Radio for July the 5th. It's show number 24 of the 2008 fantasy baseball season. I'm Patrick Davitt, your host, and in addition to Ron Chandler, we'll have our usual contributors from BaseballHQ.com, Fantasy Baseball Intelligence for Winners. We'll have our Market Watch segments with Harold Nichols analyzing news from the National League and Market Pulse columnist Matt Beagle looking at the American League. Brandon Cruz has our regular Skills Monitor segment, looking this week at Troy Tulowitzki, Cleet Thomas, Clay Buchholz, and Zach Duke. We'll have Derek McCamey with our regular Minor League Minute, looking this week at Colorado center field prospect Dexter Fowler. And Ray Murphy discusses some players on his all-second half team in his regular Speculator segment. So happy 4th of July, happy Canada Day if you're north of the border. We have another full show. Thanks for joining us here at Baseball HQ Radio. Let's talk some baseball. And to start our show, as always, we'll look at the National League. BaseballHQ.com Market Watch analyst Harold Nichols. Nick, welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio.
Good morning, Patrick. Good to be here.
Nick, maybe we could start by talking about some National League pitchers this week. And making some news in Philadelphia was Brett Myers. Here's a guy we kind of like, and now he's got himself sent down. What's going on with this pitcher in Philly?
A month ago, we were looking at Brett Myers. He pitched two consecutive PQS Dom starts and looked as though he was might be ready to turn the corner. We ask, is he ready to turn the corner and redeem his disappointing season? Well, what's happened to Brett Myers in the past month is he's not turned around at all. In fact, he's struggled to keep the ball in the ballpark. If we look at what's going on with Brett Myers for the year, he has a 5.84 ERA, 3-9 record, and really what's behind all of those struggles is a home run per fly ball rate that's around 20%. He's relying fly balls at a considerably higher rate, or home runs at a considerably higher rate than he did a year ago. Has allowed 24 home runs already compared to 31 all of 2006, 2 years ago when he was a starter. So that's been the basic problem so far with Brett Myers. He's going to have to keep the ball in the ballpark considerably better. He's been sent down to AAA Lehigh Valley to try to straighten himself out. Beyond that, his dominance, his command, his control are all quite good. There's every reason to think that Brett Myers could turn his season around. So if his owner gets frustrated with him at this point, it's a good time to pick him up, stash him on reserve, see if he can get himself straightened out in the second half.
So this looks like a buy low opportunity
on
Brett Myers.
It certainly is. Perfect time to buy low on Brett Myers.
And got to like that Lehigh City team nicknamed the Iron Pigs. And we should note that the normal rate of fly balls, home runs to fly balls, is around 10%, so 20% seems like something of an aberration, Nick, and that further supports the contention that once Myers sorts that part of his game out, the rest of the skills look pretty good. Let's move to the other end of the spectrum. Ryan Dempster, good Canadian boy from Gibson's, British Columbia, and he may have been the Cubs' most valuable player this year, certainly their most dominant pitcher. Can he keep this up?
Yeah, Ryan Dempster has had a heck of a season and was doing very well until he faced the White Sox about a week ago and then got just blasted by the White Sox. But even still, is a 3.26 ERA, an excellent record. The question is, can he continue that? This is Dempster's first shot at the starting rotation since 2003 when he had a season that was shortened by Tommy John surgery in August. And he's pitching very, very well. But one thing to look out for, over the past two seasons, 2006-2007, first half ERA 4.47, 3.34. Second half ERA 5.07, 6.25. So Dempster has struggled in the second half, a kind of a fatigue factor that seems to be working in. Then if we look at the number of innings he's pitched, he's already thrown 105 innings in the first half of this season. More innings pitched than he threw any of the seasons 2004 through 2007. So if he was fatigued in those 2006-2007, he really may show that fatigue factor very strongly heading into the second half of 2008. So probably a good time to sell high on Ryan Dempster because he really could struggle heading into the second half. Not likely to continue his 9 wins and his 3.26 ERA of the first half.
Doesn't sound like it, Nick. You're right, although you got to like those Canadian kids. They're mighty tough, especially when they're on the hockey rink, but we're not so sure about the baseball field. Another pitcher we've been talking about here at Baseball HQ Radio and at the website baseballhq.com is the Milwaukee Brewers' Manny Parra. Here, look at this June, Nick. He's got 5 wins, 2.59 ERA. Again, the question is, can he keep it up?
Well, Manny Parra has, in fact, won his last 6 starts. He hasn't lost in his last 10. Pitching extremely, extremely well. Can he keep up the pace? Well, let's see what the numbers tell us. His expected earned run average right now, 4.88, nowhere near his ERA of 3.95. His command a year ago was above our 2.0 benchmark, has dropped down to 1.5. His BPV, his basic player value, is down to 50 from 93 a year ago. So a lot of struggling going on in the numbers, behind the numbers, for Manny Parra. Been pretty lucky to get all of those wins. For example, he walked 14 batters in his last 3 games and won all of them. Behind that excellent June record is an 84% strand rate, but some skills that aren't quite so strong. So once that strand rate comes down to normal, he's not likely to keep winning. Now might be a good time to sell high on Manny Parra. You might get a lot for him, and he's likely to fade a bit as we go into the second half.
And on the other side of the coin, Nick, we've got Atlanta pitcher Tim Hudson. This is a quality starter. He's been around a long time, been a very successful pitcher in the majors and for fantasy players. But, boy, he's been really getting roughed up lately. What's the story going on with Tim Hudson?
Yes, in 2 of his last 3 starts, Tim Hudson has really been roughed up, giving up 6 runs in 2 out of 3 ball games. If you look at his skill set, though, his expected earned run average, 3.97. Dominance the same as it was a year ago. Command still above our 2.0 benchmark. Basic player value, very strong. BPI is right in line with the ones he's posted since he came to Atlanta in 2005. If you look a little deeper into his numbers, we see that he's struggling a bit on the road for some reason. And the difference is really in his strand rate. At home, a strand rate of 83%. On the road, a strand rate of 68%. And that's led to a disparity in ERA. 2.24 ERA in Atlanta, 4.34 on the road, although he does pitch some good games on the road as well. But overall, we can expect Hudson, I think, to settle down, to continue performing about the way he has been, performing at a level about this current one right now. If his owner's frustrated with those June starts, now's a good time to pick him up. Good time to buy low on Tim Hudson.
Thanks very much for doing this, Nick. We'll talk to you again in about a week's time.
Thanks a lot, Patrick. Good to be here. We'll see you next week.
Harold Nichols is a Market Watch analyst who covers the National League for BaseballHQ.com. You're listening to Baseball HQ Radio. Time now to move to the American League and BaseballHQ.com's Market Pulse columnist, Matt Beagle. Matt, welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio.
Great to be an independent thinker, Patrick.
I noticed that in your Market Pulse column this week, Matt, and you started with some independent thinking about Daniel Cabrera.
Yes, we try to look beyond our impressions to the underlying numbers, Patrick, and we always think of Daniel Cabrera as a high strikeout, high walk guy. But last year, his dominance rate fell to 7.3, and this year it's fallen to about 5. He's got his control a little better this year at 3.6, but his command ratio is only 1.4. And that's not the kind of guy you want to roster.
No, it isn't. A 1.4 command ratio, Matt, well short of Baseball HQ's 2.0 threshold.
He's very inconsistent. He had a great May, but in June, his ERA went to 7.06. So this guy is now transformed from a high strikeout pitcher to an inconsistent ground ball pitcher. He's got a 53% ground ball rate, but you never know what you're going to get with Daniel Cabrera, so be very careful. He's not the pitcher you think of him as, that high-risk, high-reward guy. He's just high-risk at this point, I believe.
It sounds like that's right with that big decline in his dominance rate. Matt, down in Tampa Bay, there's been a shakeup in the bullpen with Troy Percival going back on the DL. Seems to open the way for a couple of pitchers, most notably Dan Wheeler. You've been pretty high on him right from the start of the year. What do you think about Dan Wheeler now?
Well, Patrick, Dan Wheeler suddenly had a plunge in his skills as the seasons wore on. We certainly were touting him in the preseason and still think he's an okay pitcher. But many will look at his 1.88 ERA and jump all over him. We see a 4.96 expected ERA and a 56% fly ball rate. His dominance is way down from 9.9 batters per 9 innings last year to 5.9 this year. His control has also moved up. He's walking a few more batters, 3.1 per 9 innings, giving him a command ratio of 1.9. That fly ball rate really scares us, and he's also benefited from an 18% hit rate and only a 7% home run to fly ball rate. So while Wheeler's going to get some save opportunities, his skills have not returned to previous forms. Now, of course, at Baseball HQ, we always say once a player has a skill, he owns it. It's just a matter of it coming back. I don't think we can say that Wheeler's going to have a bad time in the closer role, but there's certainly a lot of warning signs here. He's not the pitcher the statistics show that he could be.
And not only that, Matt, but he's got some competition in that bullpen with Grant Balfour, who's really been throwing the ball well. Let's move on out to Oakland and talk about Greg Smith. The starting pitcher came somewhat out of nowhere at the start of the year when Rich Harden was on the DL, and he's looked pretty good, but how does he look for the second half?
Troy Martel did a piece on him, Patrick, on Wednesday, and warning us of some of the problems with Smith. Even though his ERA is 3.44, his expected ERA is 4.95. He's got a low 26% hit rate and a high 74% strand. His command ratio is also 1.8, below the 2.0 we normally like to see before we recommend a pitcher. He's also got an issue with fly balls. He's got a 44% fly ball rate for the season, and that's a danger for a left-handed pitcher. He especially had a bad June, so his latest outings are the scariest, it seems. His command ratio is only 1.2. He totally lost his dominance down to 5.3, and he had a 50% fly ball rate. So there's lots to fear with Greg Smith going forward for Oakland.
Let's turn to some hitters now, Matt. And looking at the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, they've got Howie Kendrick back. And we've always thought Howie Kendrick had a lot of skills. People touted him as a potential batting champion, but he's been struggling. What's the news with Howie Kendrick?
Well, Howie Kendrick really causes some concern for us, Patrick. He's got a low 2% walk rate, which gives him an I ratio of 0.12. Now, he does have a 306 batting average, but his expected batting average is only 288. And with that poor plate patience, it'll be very difficult for him to keep that average up there. He does have a good contact rate, about 85%, but with that low walk rate, it's going to be very difficult for him to maintain a 300 average. The other thing, he hasn't hit a home run this year. His ground ball rates in the last several years have always been over 50%, so there really isn't any power upside to Howie Kendrick right now. And since he's got a hamstring injury, he's stealing a lot less, so you can't really look to him for stolen bases either. So Kendrick's only 24, he's got time to develop, but this year may not be the year that he's really going to break through. He may be someone to target for 2009.
So a decent candidate for a dump trade or targeting in your keeper league. Finally, Matt, let's go to Seattle because once in a while we just have to, and talk about Adrian Beltre. Now, back in 2004, this guy had just a monster year in Los Angeles and got the big free agent deal to sign with the Mariners. And ever since then, he really hasn't measured up to those kind of expectations, has he?
Well, Patrick, he hasn't approached that level, but he's certainly been a solid player. If you look at him this year, his batting average is only 251, but his expected batting average is 293. He's also increased his plate patience to a 10% walk rate, much higher than his previous 6% posted in previous years, and his I ratio is up to 0.66. He's suffering from a low 26% hit rate, and his fly ball numbers are steady at 40%, and his power index is 121, which is also very consistent with his history. So even though his hit percentage has slightly depressed his batting average, he is increasing his plate discipline, his line drive rate's gone up a little bit, and his power profile really is about the same as the past couple years. He's putting the ball in the air at the same rate, and his home run to fly ball continues to climb. It's up to 15% this year. So over the last 5 years, we've also seen Beltre produce more homers in the second half than the first half. He certainly is a second-half player, gets off to a slow start most years, so he'd be a great second-half target. People undervalue him because they think he's been a disappointment, when in reality he's a pretty solid third baseman, pretty reliable, pretty consistent with solid power.
The only drawback, Matt, might be some trade rumors circulating around. Seattle may be looking to rebuild, dump some big contracts. So if you're in an American League format where you don't get his stats if he's traded out of the league, there's a small trade risk with Adrian Beltre. Probably shouldn't let it dissuade you from doing anything, but keep it in mind. Matt, thanks very much for doing this. We'll talk to you again in a week's time.
Thank you, Patrick. I can't wait.
Matt Beagle is a Market Pulse columnist who writes about fantasy baseball counterintelligence every Friday at BaseballHQ.com and is our regular American League analyst here at Baseball HQ Radio. When we come back, Ron Chandler.
Here's a special discount offer for listeners to Baseball HQ Radio. Right now, get 15% off BaseballHQ.com subscriptions and publications. just by typing in the special discount code at checkout. That's 15% off a subscription to BaseballHQ.com's premium content and leading-edge books like Derek McCamey's Minor League Analyst, Art McGee's How to Value Players for Rotisserie Baseball, and of course, Ron Chandler's Baseball Forecaster. When you're at the checkout and it asks for your coupon code, just type in RADIO2008. That's the word radio in lowercase, no space, and the year 2008 in numbers. Easy as that! Just type in RADIO2008 at checkout and you'll get 15% off every subscription and publication in your order. RADIO2008, 15% off. You can't beat that deal just for listening to Baseball HQ Radio.
And welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio. Patrick Davitt here, joined now by editor and publisher of BaseballHQ.com, Ron Chandler. Ron, it's a real pleasure to have you back at Baseball HQ Radio. Been too long.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. It's always fun to be on the show.
Ron, over the last little while, you've been talking at BaseballHQ.com here in Master Notes at HQ Radio about the ins and outs of actually managing your roster. And as we get to the halfway point, it seems like we have enough data to start making some pretty sensible decisions. So what steps do you think an owner needs to take to really look at his team and say what his chances are for the balance of the year?
Well, you know, at this point in the season, it's really all about categories and statistics, and the performance of players for the most part is kind of evened out to where we would expect it to be or where they're likely to be for the year. So you really have to evaluate each of the categories in your league and see how they're stratified, where there are bunches of teams close together, where it's spread out, and see where you can best leverage some movement over the second half of the season. And you'd be surprised. I mean, a lot of movement still can occur. I mean, folks who are in the second division or near the bottom of the league might think that their season's over, but I've seen teams move up to 20, 30, 40 points over the second half of the season, depending upon how the categories are stratified. So it really shouldn't give up too soon, because there's still opportunities.
You had a fairly miraculous turnaround in the second half in Tout Wars 1 year, did you not?
Yeah, back in 2004. That was the year that the Fantasyland was written. I was about 40, 45 points out of first place around the All-Star break. And because of the way, again, the categories were stratified, and I was able to pull off a couple of interesting trades, I was able to make radical moves over the second half, and I ended up finishing in second place, just 8 or 9 points out of first. So there's still lots of season left to play.
And there's a certain amount of satisfaction, even if you don't get to swig the Yoo-Hoo and cash the winner's check. You got to be real happy with yourself. And that's one of the reasons to keep trying, is just see how much progress you can make in the second half, because the experience of doing it, even if you only try real hard to go from eighth to fifth, that experience really comes in handy down the road when you are trying to make that push from third to first.
Oh, sure. That's a really good point. I mean, any experience you can have moving up in the standings can come into play in seasons down the road. So you should never give up. I mean, I see too many teams giving up. They think they're too far out. You know, they start shifting their focus to football. But really, it's a six-month-long season, and those players who have gotten off the slow starts could very well have monster second halves and could really turn things around.
You know, and I remember at First Pitch Arizona, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, but at last year's First Pitch Arizona, we were listening to the scout from formerly from the Toronto organization, or still from the Toronto organization. His name escapes me.
Yeah, Kimball Crossley. Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the phenomenon where it's real easy for us, because if you have six or seven fantasy teams, you can cherry pick the ones that are doing well and just toss the ones who aren't on the scrap heap at the halfway point, because, you know, you can go manage your team that's in third place and ignore the one that's in ninth. And he kind of chastised people in the audience who admitted that they had a lot of teams and were doing that, because he said the idea of playing fantasy baseball is to try to get a reasonable facsimile of being a big league general manager, and a big league general manager can't throw one team in and go manage another one.
Yeah, you know, that's why I kind of limit how many leagues I participate in each year to maybe three or four, because I don't want to get caught up in that type of thing. It's a real challenge to be able to take a team that's far down in the standings and work them up, and that's kind of where I am right now in Tout Wars. I mean, I was in last place for a good part of the spring, and now I've moved up about nearly 20 points. I'm in 10th place, and within striking distance of 7th right now, and which means that if I can get to that point by the All-Star break or thereabouts, The second half just offers lots of opportunities for me to even move up higher in the standings. But if you give up on that team because you've got others that are doing better, you miss out on the fun of being able to build that team up, back up in the standings. I think that's really what fantasy baseball is all about.
Or should be, yeah. Ron, the thing I like about this exact time of the year when all the teams are right around 80, 81, 82 games is that in the cumulative categories, at least, you can get a pretty good estimate of where you stand versus everybody at year end just by doubling everybody's cumulative stats. How do you estimate for the ratio categories, because there's so much moving around because of the moving denominator?
Yeah, and that's interesting. A lot of folks think that wherever they are in ERA and batting average and WHIP is pretty much where they're stuck. But the great thing about those ratio categories is that to make moves in those categories, you can do it in two ways. You can improve, and the other teams can fall back. So even though you might see a 10-point gap in batting average, you don't need to make up 10 points. You may only need to make up 3 or 5 or 6 points while the teams in front of you start falling back. And if you look at the players on each roster, you can get a sense of which players are overachieving and underachieving and where your opportunities might lie. A good rule of thumb, say with ERA, if you've, let's say in the bottom of ERA right now, your team has got maybe a 450 ERA, and you're trying to figure out what your upside is, take a look at what the first place team has in ERA and estimate where you would end up if your team performed at that level over the balance of the season. So if you've got a 450 ERA and the first place team has a 350 ERA right now, then you can probably assume that your upside is probably around a 4 ERA. So that gives you a better sense of how to manage your roster for the second half. And that's something you can do with the other stats as well.
And you had a column recently at baseballhq.com, and we ran a reader poll as well about how do you go about fixing a bad ERA. Tell us about the column and the poll.
Yeah, the poll basically asked, in your league, what would be the best way to turn around a struggling pitching staff? And we gave readers 6 choices. Start trading was one of the choices. Another choice was stay the course but drop the worst 1 to 3 killer pitchers. Wait for free agents to become available. Bail out and play for next year. Forget pitching and pump up offense. I mean, these are all the types of choices that our readers had. And the number one response that was responded to by over 40% of the poll readers was stay the course but drop the worst 1 to 3 killers. So, you know, everybody thinks that you need to acquire a top-level pitcher to help your ERA, but if you can just drop the ones that are hurting you and get a mid-level pitcher, the bottom line impact is just about the same. But people don't really see that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it? That it's the same with all three of those ratio categories. As you said, there's possibilities of moving in both directions, and one of the ways to help is just get rid of the poor performers, and it's addition by subtraction. The same thing is true in batting average. I remember writing a column at baseballhq.com a couple of years ago. I think we may even have rerun it, about how it's not wise to panic because, you know, if you just drop off a few of your poor batting average performers, that will lift your overall net batting average at the end of the season. You don't have to acquire Ichiro Suzuki or Chipper Jones to make a batting average run. All you have to do is drop Craig Munro.
Right, and you have to be careful when you're making trades along these lines too. Just had a chat at USA Today today, and one of the questions was this guy wanted to trade Matt Holliday for Scott Kazmir and Nick Swisher. And one of the points I made was that you have to be careful with your batting average category because you're trading a 320 hitter for a 240 hitter, and that is a huge gap that could really make a difference. So you have to be careful with stuff like that.
Yeah, and you have to also keep in mind that Swisher's going to get a lot of at-bats, which you know, when you're acquiring that 240 hitter, if he's got go back to the Craig Munro example, here's a guy who's going to struggle to hit 250 probably because that's just the way his skills lie, but the homers might be a good trade-off for you because he has so few at-bats that in a 6,000 or 6,200 at-bat season, he can't really do tremendous damage to your batting average if you just do the arithmetic. On the other hand, if you pick up a Nick Swisher who's going to have, you know, 320 at-bats over the second half of the season and hit 240, then now you're talking about real trouble because he's raising your denominator and he's not helping your numerator in that equation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, one of the things that's important is to actually do the math when you're evaluating these trades in these situations, and take a look at your team's bottom line and add in the player you'll be acquiring and subtract the player you're giving away and see exactly what that bottom line impact is, because that's important to look at.
Ron, you also had your recent column about trading. It's an interesting exercise. You basically conduct your trade negotiations in public in Tau Wars. Nothing really panned out for you this year, but you've done this a long time. By the way, how long have you been playing rotisserie baseball?
Oh, gosh. My first foray into rotisserie was a hockey league back in 1984. So my first baseball league was 85. So I've been playing for a very long time.
Geez, you know, my first fantasy league was hockey as well. But being in Canada, it's a little less surprising, I guess.
Well, I was in New Hampshire, so I was pretty close to Canada, actually.
Yeah, and a lot of good hockey played up at the university level in New Hampshire. As a result of having been around through the trading cycles in both amateur leagues, we'll call them, and experts leagues, what's the best single piece of advice you think you can pass along to listeners who really want to make trades but are not quite sure how to go about it?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that this basically comes down to salesmanship 101. People go into the trading process thinking, hey, I need stolen bases. Who can I get stolen bases from? But your potential trading partner really doesn't care what your needs are. They have no interest whatsoever what you need. They only care about what's in it for them. So really, the best way to conduct a trade, and really actually also the worst mistake that people make in trying to get into the trading process, was not focusing on the other person's needs exclusively, especially at the beginning of the negotiation process. If you're going to contact somebody else in your league, and even though you may need speed, you need to look at their roster and see what they need and what needs you can fill from your roster. And that's how you open the discussion. You go to someone and say, hey, I noticed so-and-so has just hit the DL. You may be a little soft on the power side. I've got a couple of power hitters I could spare. Can we talk about it? And you open up discussion that way. This way, the person has got a buy-in into the negotiation and will be more open to talking about a possible, you know, giving up something of value for you. So I think focusing exclusively on the other person's needs is really the key aspect to conducting a trade negotiation successfully.
And when you're talking about rotisserie, to hark back to what you were talking about earlier, Ron, a lot of times you can bring to a guy's attention, you know what, if you had 20 more stolen bases on your roster, you stand to pick up 6 points. Just look at the way the stat is clumped in that particular category. And a lot of times it's amazing how often guys don't see that sitting right in front of them. And you say, gosh, I've got Carl Crawford on my roster, or I've got Brian Roberts on my roster. Wouldn't those 20 bags drive you towards a lot of points? And if you just make the guy aware of the possibility, all of a sudden, as you said, he sees what's in it for him, and the trade negotiation starts off with him being eager to get those points and a lot more willing to talk turkey with you. That's a tremendous piece of advice. Ron, this subject always comes up, but where do you stand on dump trading in keeper leagues?
Well, you know, it's such a real hot topic. It generates a ton of controversy, and we have a thread on the forums right now at baseballhq.com that's really hot and heavy about the pros and cons. I used to be way back a real anti-dumping proponent, but over the last probably 5 or 6 years, as I've gotten deeper into the whole keeper league mentality, I've come to realize that, you know, dump trading is kind of a misnomer. I think it's just a cycle that goes on in these leagues where teams contend and then they need to rebuild. And so these trades absolutely need to happen in order for there to be parity within the league. So I think dump trading, whatever you want to call it, is important so that it gives teams at the bottom of the standings an opportunity to build for the future. And even though it may cost the teams at the top of the standings a chance to contend year over year over year, which creates dynasties, which I think is also bad for the game, because then just look at the way people view the New York Yankees. For all those years, they were contending, and people looked badly upon them because they were able to always contend year after year, and you have the teams like the Kansas City Royals and the Pittsburgh Pirates who are always at the bottom of the standings. And it's the same thing in a fantasy league, because you need to be able to give everybody a chance at the beginning of the season to know that they've got a chance to win. And if they don't have that, they're going to lose interest. So these dump trades provide that parity, provide that turnover of talent that gives all teams in the league a chance to win each year.
Let me play the devil's advocate on that score then, Ron, and say, you know, you mentioned the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Kansas City Royals. These are teams that were poorly managed, and if you apply that to fantasy leagues, don't the best managers tend to rise to the top regardless of the format? Then that brings up the secondary problem where, and this is the problem that's always getting raised on the forums by people who are against stump trading, and that is, I don't want the guy in 11th place determining who wins the league this year because he's willing to dump off all of his studs to the second place guy when I'm in the lead.
Yeah, and I think probably the biggest problem with dump trading as it's currently situated is that everybody who's in contention doesn't have an opportunity to make a fair offer to that team that is dumping their top prize talent. So what I usually suggest in these situations is that if an 11th place team is starting to deal off their top talent, they should offer to everybody who's in contention, and whoever makes the best offer should get that opportunity to get those players. So everybody has the chance at those players, and whoever doesn't get it, well, you just didn't make the best offer.
Or didn't do as good a job of being a salesman, which is another objection that we hear from time to time.
Well, sure, you know, that's the rules of the league, though. I mean, if you're in a league where you have trading and you have rules that allow for this turnover of talent, those are skills that you need to bring to the table. It's not just talent evaluation. It's also to be able to negotiate and deal talent when you need to deal talent.
It's an excellent point, and it does make for a broader experience. And, in fact, estimating talent is a big part of making a good trade. I mean, trying to get somebody to hand over a player to you because he doesn't recognize the player's innate skills and is more focused on the productive aspects of it in real time is something that we focus on a lot at baseballhq.com, is finding those diamonds in the rough. Somebody's off to a slow start or has just been unlucky, then that's the time to pounce and make a trade because you're a better talent estimator. That's one way to get that player onto your roster. And speaking of that, Ron, I know that at baseballhq.com, we don't really believe in the concept of a second half player versus a first half player.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've done research on this, and there are some players who will perform better or worse in one half versus the other over the course of maybe two seasons on the outside, perhaps three seasons. But to actually label somebody as a consistent first half or second half performer, it really doesn't happen. There are very, very few players who have this quality, and you know, first half versus second half, you know, July 1st, the All-Star break, is kind of an arbitrary delineator of time. You know, at the All-Star break, does somebody who's struggling suddenly say, well, I'm going to turn my game around now? I mean, it really doesn't happen. So we don't really look too highly on that, and we just try to evaluate players all season long for when they might turn things around.
And as you said, the big thing there, I think, that everybody really needs to listen to is the All-Star break is just a very artificial dividing line. I mean, anybody can have a good 3 months, but it might be May, June, July, you know, it just as easily as July, August, September. So,
sure. You know, remember back to Johan Santana in 2004. I mean, he had a 5.50 ERA first part of the season, then turned it around, had an ERA of like a 1.25 the rest of the way. But the date that he turned his season around was June 9th. So, I mean, it's really arbitrary.
Maybe give us a hitter and a pitcher in each league that you think is poised for a second-half turnaround, not because they're a second-half player, but because they're underperforming their base skills.
Sure, and again, just looking at the base skills, on the pitching side, a couple of pitchers like A.J. Burnett and Roy Oswalt are both have elevated ERAs, but their underlying skills are very, very strong. So they could be very well poised to have a strong second half. On the hitting side, well, Jimmy Rollins, I think, if his ankle is sound, I think he could put up strong numbers. He still has MVP caliber skills. A lot of people are writing off Troy Tulowitzki, which I can't really figure out, but he's another player with strong skills who could just put up a second half because he's playing and healthy. And an interesting sleeper type of second half player, I think. Melvin Mora, the Orioles, is batting only like .227 right now, but if you take a look at his underlying skills, he probably should be batting about 50 points higher. So he might have an interesting second half, too.
A little bit of trade danger in a couple of those names. Of course, if you're in single league formats where you lose the player if he's traded out of league, A.J. Burnett, anybody on the Orioles, a bit of a risk in that score with the with them falling back so quickly into the second half of their divisions. Although you got to be pretty pleased with the Orioles this year, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, an interesting club, and the whole division is very interesting this year, so it's been fun to watch.
And before we let you go, Ron, there's been some notice on the site about First Pitch Arizona this fall, usually around the end of October, first part of November. Maybe let people know that the planning has already begun. There's some chances to get in on early bird pricing.
Yeah, you know, we already started planning the program. We've got some new sessions set up. And for those who are not familiar with First Pitch Arizona, it's a three-day event. It's October 31st through November 2nd this year out in Phoenix, where we get to watch Arizona Fall League games and get together and have seminar sessions on all sorts of fantasy baseball-related information. We invite speakers from all different websites and services. We've got folks like Joe Sheehan, a baseball prospectus coming, John Sickles, Peter Kreutzer, Jason Gray from ESPN, plus a whole bevy of BaseballHQ.com writers and analysts to help move things along. It's a great weekend, and right now we do have some early bird rates, so you can get in at a reduced cost.
And how do you go about finding the website to look into it more and maybe make that registration?
Sure, just BaseballHQ.com. We have links all over there with little banner ads that you can click on and get all the information you need about the program.
And boy, if you need, I'm sure you don't, but if you need a recommendation from me, I went to my first Pitch Arizona last year, and it was as much fun as draft day darn near. It was so exciting and interesting, and going out to the games with all the guys and meeting all the subscribers. It's just a fantastic 3 days if you really enjoy fantasy baseball, and the camaraderie of it is just excellent. First Pitch Arizona is really fun. Now, Ron, thanks very much for doing this. We'll talk to you again later in the season.
Hey, thanks, Patrick.
Ron Chandler is the editor and publisher of BaseballHQ.com. This is Baseball HQ Radio.
My daddy plays fantasy baseball. It used to make him real mad all the time.
Come on, you idiot!
But then he started reading BaseballHQ.com. He says they have articles every day analyzing player news from both leagues and the minor leagues, whatever that is. And he says they have weekly columns about power hitters, speed, batting average, pitching, and fantasy baseball research, whatever that is. And he spends a lot of time trading ideas with other fantasy players on the BaseballHQ.com forums. Since he started reading BaseballHQ.com, fantasy baseball makes my daddy happy.
Woohoo! Touch them all!
And my mommy is happy when daddy takes her out for a big expensive dinner every October. But mommy doesn't like it when he puts that big trophy in our front room.
BaseballHQ.com. Fantasy baseball intelligence for winners.
Like my daddy!
And welcome back to Baseball HQ Radio. I'm Patrick Davitt. Time now for Baseball HQ Radio Skills Monitor, comparing players' skills and trends with their results. Here's our analyst, Brandon Cruz.
It's been about 2 weeks since Colorado shortstop Troy Tulowitzki returned from a torn quad injury, and while he smacked a couple of home runs during that time, he's still struggling to hit for a high average, batting just .211 since his return and .168 overall. But thanks to solid overall skills, his expected batting average is .272, and over those last 2 weeks, thanks to an 87% contact rate and .166 power index, his expected batting average has been .335. So a hitter whose skills say he should be red hot has been ice cold, with some terrible luck in the form of a 19% hit rate. Tulowitzki probably won't match last year's .291 batting average, but he's clearly a better hitter than this. Consider this bad luck slump as a buying opportunity. With Magley Ordóñez on the DL, Cleet Thomas is back in Detroit and getting at-bats in the outfield. And he's pouncing on the opportunity, hitting .393 in his last 28 at-bats and raising his overall average to .315. But his contact rate, batting eye, power index, and speed index are all below average, and his expected batting average is currently just .264, a near match for Baseball HQ's projection for the rest of his season. Thomas's playing time window will likely be short, but if someone in your league is interested in him, don't hesitate to sell. Boston's Clay Buchholz made 8 starts in April and May before being sidelined by a broken fingernail. He's been working in AAA since coming off the DL, and there's a pretty good chance he could be called back up to the majors in the second half. His 5.53 ERA and 1.63 WHIP looked bad, but they were inflated by a 38% hit rate and 65% strand rate. Hidden underneath those numbers are a 9.1 domination rate, a 2.2 command rate, a 72 BPV, and a 4.26 expected ERA. Buchholz is still young and prone to inconsistency, but he's been a better pitcher than his surface stats would have you believe. The opposite is true for Pittsburgh's Zach Duke, who has a 3.88 overall ERA and a 2.95 ERA in his last 6 starts. But his strikeout rate has been almost non-existent, at just 3.4, and his command rate has been lousy at 1.3. He succeeded by keeping his walks down, though his 2.6 control rate is good but not elite, and by allowing very few home runs. But as his 5.22 expected ERA indicates, he'll be hard-pressed to keep that up for very long. In the 2008 baseball forecaster, we stated that Duke needed to prove he can maintain a domination rate in at least the mid-fives before you could buy back in. He hasn't, and you shouldn't. For Baseball HQ Radio, I'm Brandon Cruz.
And Brandon Cruz writes a weekly column on batting averages at BaseballHQ.com and contributes original baseball research to the site. The Skills Monitor is a regular weekly feature here at Baseball HQ Radio, and BaseballHQ.com also keeps you on top of skills trends with our hot lists updated every day. Now it's time for the Minor League Minute. BaseballHQ.com minor league expert analyst Derek McCamey, looking this week at Colorado center field prospect Dexter Fowler.
Dexter Fowler, center field prospect for the Colorado Rockies, is finally living up to his five-tool ability at AA Tulsa this year. He's hitting .317 with a .393 on base percentage and a .489 slugging percentage. Add to that his extra base hit prowess of 22 doubles and 7 home runs. And to show off his blazing speed, he's got 15 stolen bases. Fowler is a guy who I haven't been real high on in the past just because he's never had that breakthrough season offensively, but he's really holding his own this season at AA. The switch hitter can hit well from both sides of the plate, even though he's fairly new to hitting from the left side, which he was introduced into pro baseball. But this guy's got true power speed potential from a fantasy perspective. Defensively, he's an excellent center fielder with range in all directions and a very strong throwing arm. Fowler, being that the Rockies are out of the pennant race this year, is likely to be called up sometime after the All-Star break, and I expect him to be inserted into center field. While I think he may be able to steal some bases and hit some home runs, I think he's probably going to struggle a little bit with hitting for batting average, you know, just trying to adjust to more breaking pitches and so forth. But Fowler's an excellent prospect for the future, and one I think will be certainly the starting center fielder in 2009. For Baseball HQ Radio, this is Derek McCamey with BaseballHQ.com.
Derek McCamey is a minor league analyst at BaseballHQ.com, along with Rob Gordon and Jeremy Deloney. Together, they provide BaseballHQ.com subscribers with comprehensive coverage of the minor leagues, including daily call-ups, regular organizational reports, and more. You're listening to Baseball HQ Radio. I'm Patrick Davitt. It's time now for The Speculator with BaseballHQ.com managing editor Ray Murphy. In this week's edition, Ray talks about players on his all-second half team.
The first half of the season has been unremarkable for Atlanta second baseman Kelly Johnson. But there are a couple of reasons to think better things are coming in the second half. On a month-over-month basis, Johnson has been increasing his fly ball percentage this year. That indicates that as July and summer weather blow through Major League ballparks, increased warmth and humidity could allow a few more of those fly balls to land on the other side of the fence. Also, Johnson has been increasing his walk rate as this season has gone on, and that should increase his on-base percentage and offer him more opportunities to steal some bases. So, a power speed spike from Johnson is possible in the second half. Another player on our watch list for the second half is Toronto third baseman Scott Rolen. We were skeptical earlier in the season of Rolen's ability to come back from his chronic shoulder problems, but quietly in the second half of June, Rolen has found his power stroke, including a 3-home-run week. We're at least open to the possibility that Rolen's recent power surge indicates some increased strength or flexibility or good health in his shoulder that will allow him to sustain better production in the second half of the season. On the mound, we're interested in Andy Sonnenstein of the Tampa Bay Rays. There are rumors that he's going to lose his rotation spot to super prospect David Price sometime in the second half, but quietly, Sonnenstein has been quite good lately. When he gets in trouble, it has been the home run ball that has plagued him in his bad outings. But in his last 7 starts, he has not allowed a single home run. And in those 7 starts, he has not allowed more than 3 earned runs in any start. Obviously, the success of the Rays is one of the big stories in baseball this season, and Sonnenstein figures to be provided with good support from his offense and bullpen as the second half goes on. And if he continues to pitch consistently as he has, a good total of wins and consistent outings and a serviceable ERA and WHIP should follow. But then again, it's all just speculation. I'm Ray Murphy for Baseball HQ Radio.
Ray Murphy is the managing editor of BaseballHQ.com, and his weekly speculator column appears at the site every Thursday. While BaseballHQ.com believes in playing 80% probabilities, the speculator looks at the potential profits to be found in those other 20%. And that's Baseball HQ Radio for July the 5th. Thanks very much for listening as we put show number 24 into the record books. We appreciate that you take the time. Please tell your friends about our program, available as a free podcast through iTunes and FeedBurner.com, other aggregators, or you can download the program directly from BaseballHQ.com/radio. I also want to thank our guests today from BaseballHQ.com, Fantasy Baseball Intelligence for Winners, starting with Ron Chandler. Boss always does a great job. I also want to thank our regular contributors, Market Watch analysts Harold Nichols and Market Pulse columnist Matt Beagle, our skills monitor Brandon Cruz, minor league analyst Derek McCamey, and our speculator columnist Ray Murphy. I'm Patrick Davitt. Happy 4th of July. Happy Canada Day. Thanks again for listening. And we will be back again next week with another edition of the podcast with Fantasy Baseball Intelligence for Winners, Baseball HQ Radio.
You've been listening to Baseball HQ Radio, a production of Chandler Enterprises, LLC, which is solely responsible for its content. The executive producer is Ron Chandler. Thoughts and opinions expressed in this program are those of the individual speaking and do not necessarily represent the views of BaseballHQ.com or Chandler Enterprises. Baseball HQ Radio is available for download as an MP3 or podcast. Go to BaseballHQ.com/radio. And you can download past shows anytime and get new editions every Saturday morning through the end of the regular season. This edition of Baseball HQ Radio was recorded, produced, and edited by Patrick Davitt. For Baseball HQ Radio, I'm your announcer, Angela Rodriguez, reminding you that winners play the HQ way.